ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What's on the mind of the country's biggest, most influential, and most innovative business leaders, founders, and creators?
You're in a very pessimistic place, Alan.
You get to find out every Friday with me, Alan Kohler, as I sit down with the people influencing the markets, the economy, and the ideas shaping our world.
I engage regularly, enthusiastically with the tech sector and some of these big players in AI.
Find That's Business with Alan Kohler on the ABC Business Daily feed, on ABC Listen, or wherever you get your podcast.
A broken promise, or delivering fairness and equity to a broken housing system? That's the question tonight's budget papers will answer, with key details of the centrepiece housing tax reform set to be revealed. Treasurer Jim Chalmers says Labor has chosen the hard road of reform in what the Albanese government is calling the most ambitious budget yet. But with so many elements already announced, are there any budget surprises left? Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm Tom Crowley, looking forward to being with you for the lesser of two podcasts that you will do today, PK. I think I'm allowed to, put myself down and say that, because the other one you'll actually have the budget.
It's not. This is not lesser. This is more, not lesser. look, we are at the still speculating based very much on educated speculation, can I say, not sort of random thoughts. But yes, we have finally come to budget day. Within a few hours, the Treasurer will be delivering his budget. And you are right, there'll be a second podcast with all of the budget, facts tonight. And both me and Carrington Clark are going to do a joint entry there. And it's coming out on the Politics Now feed. But we're recording this pre-budget. And so it's all very preview-y. And Tom, there's a lot we already know, as we've been saying. There's been a slow drip of announcements and leaks. Orchestrated leaks, the government wants you to know, so they can get you ready for all of this. The Treasurer, Jim Chalmers, suggested the budget would respond to pressures and anxieties people are feeling, driving them to people outside of the mainstream. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, One Nation. That's what he's talking about there. Tom, just walk us through what we kind of know and what we kind of think.
All right. Here's what I kind of know. And I think you're right to say there's been a lot of orchestrated leaking going on. But also, you know what? I reckon also some unorchestrated leaking as well is my theory, that there's been some of this stuff that the government might have liked to keep up its sleeve for a budget night surprise. But its famous last words almost all out there, I think. Tax, negative gearing and capital gains tax discount. The great combination of tax policies that together have made rental properties for 25 years attractive, not in and of themselves, but attractive because you can pay less tax. That is going to change. There will be grandfathering of some kind, probably pretty extensive grandfathering, meaning that if you already have an asset, you can continue to negatively gear and you can keep any gains you have already made under the old 50% capital gains tax discount. But the new regime will apply to any gains from budget night. That is what we think. There may be probably some sort of carve out for newly built homes, particularly from negative gearing, so that the government can say, we're encouraging you to build more. And if you want to keep doing this, go to the new end of the market. That's pretty much what we think we know on negative gearing and capital gains. Also, on taxes, there will be something to do with trust funds where people can play all sorts of funny and very complicated games with their accountants to use great discretion about when they earn income, when they pay tax. It's another one of those things that back in 2019, Labor wanted to tackle. We think we'll have a crack at it tonight, perhaps with some kind of minimum tax on money that comes out of trusts. Then on the spending side, I think the restraint will be shown mainly in the absence of big news spends. We think we know that defence is pretty much the only major news spending item. Mm. There'll be a massive save to the NDIS. There will probably be some other saves around the place, $61 billion in total, we are told. There's also a little bit of new cost of living spending, the fuel excise discount and a couple of other things in the offing as well. Still, Jim Chalmers saying it's a responsible budget shaped by war. I think his speech will take two themes in a dangerous world: the war and uncertainty on the economic front, But as you say, populism, one nation, people angry about feeling that the system is not working for them, housing tax changes are Labor's answer to that populist wave that they see building out in the community. That's what the story, I think, will be tonight.
That will be the story. That's the story they want out. But we'll be looking for some other nuggets, won't we? Because there'll be other things.
Always. That they, always, always.
Yeah, the things that aren't so potentially politically popular, you know, look to the cuts. What other cuts that we haven't perhaps had shared with us that are being made that will have an impact on people's lives, I reckon.
Yeah.
Don't you reckon?
Oh, yeah. And there's always, I mean, the things that are hidden in the budget papers are always the things that you don't want to drop out because you don't want there to be much focus on them. But $61 billion, that's a lot of money. And there'll be some things in those savings line items that
annoy
may not
some people.
Coming.
They have an impact on some people's lives. But again, that's to be seen. I think it's really interesting, the housing reforms and the way they'll frame them. My understanding is that there will be a kind of frame which is, you know, this is how many young people will be able to get into housing to own their homes as a result of big change. That's a compelling pitch. If they put a number on it, which I suspect they will, that kind of starts quantifying whether it's worth you, investor, you know, losing future benefits to benefit this group of people who, you know, most people concede left, right, centre have been dudded by the current system.
Yeah, I think that's what it's all about tonight because, you know, we know negative gearing and capital gains, they're complicated tax policies to explain. There's lots of details in the weeds, but political messages are simple ones. And it's tonight we are going to create X 100,000 new homeowners by the year 2030. I think it will be really that simple. And it's an interesting point to make because every new homeowner that you create by changing the tax settings is almost by definition an investor that you've chased out of the market. That's what this policy is. Mm. You're chasing people. You're taxing investors more. You think some of them will give up the game and say, not worth it, I'm getting out of here. That'll mean fewer rental properties, but fewer renters, as some of the people who are trying to show up.
Fewer rental properties, fewer renters, exactly.
As people who are showing up at auctions and trying to buy for their own home will have a greater chance of doing that themselves. Now, the funny thing is that Labor recognises that they don't want to make that number as high as it can possibly be because they're grandfathering. Because if you didn't grandfather, if you just said, look, we're going to take every single negatively geared property and we're going to yank that away, I'll tell you what, you create a lot more homeowners, you would chase a lot more investors out of the market, but you would create uncertainty and anger. You know, you were talking about this with Jacob yesterday. Well, people who voted with something in mind.
Well, they
would
did.
Be furious.
They did.
Absolutely.
Because he was quite explicit, and that goes to the broken promise. Now, the broken promise isn't just vibes, guys. It's not just, oh, because he said it. It's because he said it, and you may, and it's not everyone. People vote for lots of different reasons, on the brand, on the vibes, on who they hate the most, and then they, you know, vote for the person they hate a bit less than the person they hate the most. I mean, that's really, you know, especially in compulsory voting, you're not getting out the base, you're getting out everyone. If you make a decision, all right, I'm going to just say you don't love Labor, you're a swinging voter, but I think they're better than like the last election. Lots of people clearly look at the numbers, 94 seats would have thought they're better than this Dutton opposition, so I'm going to vote for them. I've got three negatively geared properties. They say they won't touch it. All right. And then you do, and you don't grandfather them. I mean, seriously, write your political death of that person's vote. Like, that is a big, big, serious thing to do. However, by grandfathering, they are creating a whole set of new problems, I think, in terms of who will have access to these amazing tax arrangements in the future. Now, their answer, I suspect, will be, you know, the fairness question of the decisions people made at an election, but also, yes, the chaos to the market if you did do it to everyone. And also, then you can do it for new homes.
Yes. Well, yeah, that's
true. So you've still got a minimisation tool, if that's what you want.
Gosh, there's a lot there, isn't there? I mean, yeah, and I think that it's a really good point that it's not just about young and old, this, like, that's a framing that the government is talking more about this time. It is ultimately about rich and poor, to use the simple words, as you say, oversimplification. But tell you what, back in 2019, Jim Chalmers, the shadow finance minister in this fated Bill Shorten election, was walking around saying, this is a tax break for the top end of town. You know, we're taking this away. We're looking after the little guy. It's also about haves and have-nots. It gets into that terrain. And I think, you know, the broken promise thing is an interesting one for me. I think this is actually probably something that we care, I think, more about in Australia than in a lot of other systems. I reckon our short terms have something to do with that, because 3 years is such a bite-sized amount of time that we've almost got an expectation here in Australia that the things you'll tell us that you will do will last for the 3. It's not like that in the UK. 5 years is a long time, and people expect that governments will come along in the middle of terms and need to change to changing circumstances. But here in Australia, it's such a feature of our politics. We go to an election campaign, we bombard politicians with questions about everything that they might conceivably do, and then we hold them to it, but they always, always, in the middle of a term, will change their mind on something or other. And the Albanese government did that last term on stage 3. I think they felt that they got away with it because they could make the case that who cares if we said we wouldn't? You like what we're doing better than, you know, you wanted us to do it, and so here we are. And that's really the only question I think that matters here again, is that everyone is angry about housing. Will they buy that this is a good enough solution that they don't care about the breach of faith? And that is where I think Labor will be most afraid of the line that the Batuta advocate and a few other voices have been trotting out in the last week or so, the accusation that this is pulling the ladder up. That's the thing. The grandfathering is the thing on which, to me, this all hinges, and it's where it could fall down, because it's a concession that Labor's making to the people who have benefited from the concessions so far, but it directly undermines your ability to make an intergenerational argument, and I think it opens the door for people like the Batuta advocate to be cynical about it. And if people become cynical that this is just not going to change anything in housing, then it is a breach of trust, and people won't forgive you for breaking your promise. They need to cut through and convince people that this is really going to change things.
They've been selling these ideas, though, for several weeks, because they've made the political calculation that they need everyone to be ready so it's not shock and awe on budget night. Now, shock and awe can be exciting when there are fewer losers, but this is going to involve losers as well, so you want to prepare the ground. And I'll give you an example of when the ground wasn't prepared as well, because there was some prep, but that 2014 budget, where, of course, Abbott shocked everyone, and it was kind of really, I think, the beginning of the end for him. Of course, there was that knighthood, famously, but to Prince Philip at the time, but which really, really was the final nail, but that's a whole other chapter. But I do think if you get your budget wrong and it freaks people out too much. And that's where you see some holding back on broader, you know, blitzrig kind of reform everywhere. So it'll be interesting to see how much further they might go beyond what they tell us.
What's your memory of that budget week, PK, in 2014? How early was it obvious that that one was going to go a step further than where people were ready to go?
I think we did know there was a sense of where they were going broadly. I don't think it was entirely like, oh, you know, we knew that Abbott was, you know, dancing with lots of ideas. I think it was the scale of it in one document. And, of course, there were some pretty controversial ideas. Medicare co-payment, of course, which undermined the concept of a universal health system. It added inequity in terms of the optics, and that was diabolical for Abbott. Now, of course, there was that famous photo at the time of Matthias Cormann, who was then the finance minister, Joe Hockey, who was the treasurer, and their cigars. So the whole optics of that budget was kind of, you know, a party that was not compassionate to working and poor people. And that was diabolical, I think, for the Liberal Party and their brand at that time. And wasn't quite what was expected or promised, which was, you know, that the landslide election win for Abbott, which was about smashing Labor, who he said were dysfunctional. This one, the comparison, there will be bigger reforms and some things that will annoy people. I mean, if your fancy tax arrangements, let's wait for the trust. A lot of people use them, my friends.
Oh, yeah.
And so if there are tangible losers, and there's a scare campaign about that. Don't forget the death taxes campaign in 2019, which really smashed Labor. You know, I reckon there is going to potentially be danger for Labor. It's not going to be easy to sell it.
Totally. And the trusts is one that's maybe worth expanding on for just a minute because, I mean, like you, you know, I think everyone's eyes can tend to glaze over a little bit if you're not someone who uses trusts. But, you know, this is a system where people are able to set themselves up as a sole trader, put what looks for legal purposes like a small business into a trust, earn their income as business income instead of wage income. And what have we been hearing over and over again in the economic debate over the last few months? If there's one thing you don't want to be in this country, it's a wage earner. Mm. This allows you to take advantage of the best of both systems, if you like, and you can choose when it is convenient for tax purposes for you to collect wage income or when it's convenient for you to include it as business income. And there are all sorts of complicated laws and a bit of a cage match that goes on between the ATO and people and accountants about exactly when they're doing things that are in the right spirit and when they're not. But there is enormous amount of discretion and enormous amount of money that very high net worth people can manage to save off their tax bills when they use these structures. But it's that perfect complicated tax reform that is a scare campaigner's dream, in a sense. There are so many little details. It will be so easy, a la franking credits, to make people who use trusts for much more benign purposes that will not be affected by these changes, perhaps, to make them afraid it's coming after you. We're coming after your small business. We're coming after what is an option you may pursue in future. It's got that about it. And I just, I have to have this funny feeling that by Friday, whether it's trusts, whether it's capital gains in the share market, we're going to be talking about something that's not housing by the end of this week. We didn't expect the government wants to talk about housing. We're going to get sidetracked because it always happens. And the campaign will kick off. You know, the Liberals aren't going to run a campaign on housing because I don't think they want to be there. They'll find something else. It'll be small business or something.
Yeah, it's thin end of the wedge stuff, right? Like it's absolutely going to, you are prescient. I'm telling you, you will. That is absolutely correct. That is exactly what will happen. And so it's the competing narrative game. Is the government now talented enough? They have got sharper at managing that and sort of have, I know they've been wargaming where it could go. So that'll be really interesting. Look, I want to go to the budget bottom line because, of course, debt, deficit are very politicised and political and also economically important issues. Labor has confirmed the bottom line will be $4.9 billion stronger than it was expected in MAIFO. All economists say you've got to look at the net figure, really, rather than the smoke and mirrors of whatever numbers are being leaked at the moment. What will you be looking for?
I'll be looking at the first year. So we get these sort of big year, like 4 or 5 year total deficit figures. But for inflation, it's all about today, the money going out right now. I mean, I think that this is like, I think the way that I frame this budget bottom line question is that all through Labor's first term, they had one hand tied behind their back because, let's be honest, they're a Labor government. They like being able to have some spending announcements that go to their core base. Look, we're delivering higher welfare payments, you know, single parenting payments, all of these things, childcare. We thought the constraint was temporary and we thought, let's also be honest, at the end of last year that it was starting to lift and they might be able to start looking at big new spends like childcare. Not for a while. The Reserve Bank's statement on monetary policy last week, taking the market's assumption of where the rate would be, had it in the high fours until 2027 and into 2028. That's years of higher rates, years of this inflation fight is now what the RBA is expecting. And so an entire second term as well, where this table of truth, the secret part of the budget papers where we go to see whether the government has been making spending decisions that are quote-unquote responsible, it's not going to cease to be a feature of budget night. We're going to continue every year to look at the question of when government spends on anything or even delivers tax cuts. One of the questions that we will have to ask is it going to put up inflation? That was not a feature of federal politics and budget nights for probably 20 years at least.
Oh, we certainly, when we mentioned 2014, that was not what we were looking at.
No, but it is well and truly part of the firmament now because we're not going to be out of this inflation world for a while.
That's right. Just finally, the government's doing something that I think is a little bit cheeky, in my view, which is putting out their response, long-awaited formal response, to the Peter Murphy review into curbing gambling harm. Now, we already know what they want to do, before they've published the response, because they made an announcement about some pretty modest changes to sort of gambling regulation around advertising a couple of weeks ago now. But, you know, Tom, put it out and all the journalists are in lockup, and, I mean, I'm not going to be locked up quite yet, so I'll be covering it. But, you know, come on.
Yep. It's a bit...
We know what's going on here.
Yes,
they don't want to talk about this too much, do they?
No, and look, you know, 2 years or however long it's been that they have had to respond to this inquiry, and it's been one that, you know, even after they told us what their policy response was going to be, there was still this discomfort about having to put out a document where you respond in some way to every single one of the recommendations. There are some questions about national regulators and all sorts of other little bits and pieces that we don't really know their position on, and where, in theory, they're going to have to actually write some sentences that explain where they're not proceeding with recommendations, why. This is a government that doesn't do a very good job or have a very good track record, it's fair to say, of responding to every one of these parliamentary inquiries. And I think it's not wrong to say that they often sneer at the idea that these inquiries even matter all that much to them necessarily, or that they should have a heavy bearing on the government to respond promptly to them, for all that the government, you know, sort of, and the Prime Minister likes to talk about kind of, you know, parliamentary conventions and all that sort of thing. Their record in responding to this stuff is not good. This is one where there's been concerted kind of public pressure on them to respond. The gas inquiry, which is going to land soon, I think will probably turn into another one where the longer they decide they don't want to do something on gas tax, people will be able to continue to use the existence of a parliamentary inquiry to say, when are you going to respond? Almost Royal Commission style. And so I think it's an interesting emerging political phenomenon in this parliament, and I think the growing crossbench has something to do with it, that when they can't get leverage any other way on issues, committee reports that say something strong and that ask questions of government, one of the most powerful tools that the crossbench has had to press the government to talk about issues that they don't want to talk about. And this has been a long-running saga to even get a response, but we're getting one. And so it'd be interesting to see whether the crossbench thinks this is something that they can replicate for other issues.
I agree. Look, this is just your first of two podcasts you're getting today, so enjoy this thoroughly. We'll be recording our second episode with what's actually in the budget tonight, including any sneaky surprises. And it will be released after 7:30 tonight when the budget is all live and exciting, so you'll be able to listen to that. So really, we've just nailed the content, haven't we, for today?
We don't need the rest of the day, do we, PK? Oh, we can take it off.
We don't have a productivity problem here. If you have a question for us, send it to theparty@abc.net.au. See you, Tom.
See ya.